Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 359. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have another great guest today, but first, let's bring on my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going almost to 2025, and that's pretty wild. So, you know, we'll have spring training before we know it. So, that's a lot of fun, grinding through these rankings episodes. And, yeah, I'm just ready for some live baseball and warmer weather.
Aren't we all? And this is our last episode of 2024 and our 101st episode of the year. I meant to mention that last episode was our 100th of the year, but completely forgot. So, yeah, 101st episode and last of the 2024 calendar year. And we're starting off our third base week with third base prospects. And joining us to do so, he is the lead prospect analyst and senior baseball editor over at RotoWire, at Rio J.R. Anderson on Twitter. Mr. James Anderson. James, how are you?
Great, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on and looking forward to talk about a loaded position of prospects.
Yeah. We talk about third base prospects right now. You know, this isn't the most loaded position, but you know, you'll get some shortstops moving over. We'll always get some guys moving over to third base. So this will end up being better than it looks now, but still got some good names at the top, though. So a lot of fun names. Two guys that are, for the most part, top 10 prospects nearly across the board. But before we get into all of the rankings and discussion, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg MILB. I am at Eric Cross MLB. And again, James is at Real JR Anderson. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out all of our personal platforms everywhere we write. Chris at thedynastydugout.com. I get my stuff at toolshedfantasy.com. And of course, both of us over at RotoBaller as well. And all of James's stuff is over at RotoWire. And make sure to check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout to get 10% off any premium package over at RotoBaller.com. So we'll start off with our personal top 10s here at this third base position. And James, why don't you go kick us off as our guest?
Sure, yeah. So I only included players who played the majority of their games at third base in 2024. My first third base prospect is Matt Shaw. Number two, Kobe Mayo. Number three, Cam Collier. Number four, Cam Smith. Number five, Brady House. Number six, Eric Batanti. Number seven, Brock Wilkin. Number eight, Braden Taylor. Number nine, Gino Groover. And number 10, Mike Bobby.
All right, Chris, who you got in your top 10?
All right, I have Kobe Mayo at one and Matt Shaw at two. It's just the inverse of James there, followed by Cam Smith and Cam Collier. So the Cams at three and four, Luke Adams at five, Sal Stewart at six, Eric Batanti seven, Braden Taylor eight, Juan Brito nine, and Davison De Los Santos, who is a first baseman, but he had 20 games at third, so I did include him there at 10.
All right. I also have Coby Mayo first, Matt Shaw second, though I'm starting to question that. They're both very close in my rankings, so maybe I end up flip-flopping that moving forward here, but both top 10 overall. And then we get a pretty good drop-off in my personal rankings overall, but down to I have Braden Taylor at 3, Cam Smith at 4, Jace Young 5, Brady House 6, Davison De Los Santos 7, Shea Whitcomb 8, Cam Collier 9, Zach DiCenzo at 10. Though, to be honest, 5 through 10 is not an area that I'm super high on a lot of those guys. I mean, I like them, but it kind of gets a little shallow at this position pretty quickly here. But so let's hop into our player discussion here, starting with the two guys at the top. We'll kick it off with Matt Shaw, who looks like he could maybe even win the starting third base gig in Chicago out of camp this year, now that Isak Paredes is now down with the Houston Astros following that Kyle Tucker deal. So, James, you had him at number one here in your rankings. What are you expecting from Matt Shaw, both initially this year and long-term? You know, guys coming off a really good season, 21 home runs, 31 steals, was really even a lot better after the middle of May or so after a slow start. So what are you expecting from Matt Shaw, both short-term and long-term?
Yeah, I think I have Coby Mayo ahead of Shaw on my rankings that are up on the site right now, but I will have Shaw ahead of Mayo on my update here in a couple weeks due to the Isak Paredes trade. I just think Shaw is a much better option just for 2025 than Mayo, just because I feel much better about 500 plate appearances being there from Shaw. If Mayo had the same sort of runway to playing time, it would be a really tough call for me, but just the 2025 edge that goes to Shaw for me is enough to move him ahead of Mayo on the overall list. And for Shaw, I think, you know, long term it's pretty easy 2020 potential over at third base, which is a really nice thing. In the short term, I think, you know, you could be looking at maybe 15 to 18 homers as a rookie, maybe 15 steals, something like that. I'm not jumping all over him at his current sort of early 200s, mid-200s ADP, but I do think he's a fine pick there, and just a nice roster-building piece just to get the stolen bases from a third baseman like that. And I just think he's got a really high floor, just a natural hitter, and his game was just kind of built for Roto Fantasy with the speed and, you know, good average. I think he'll have a fine OBP at his peak, and just really not much to complain about with Shaw for me. I don't really see him ever being a first-round pick in fantasy, but I could see him being a third-round pick maybe even like a borderline second-round pick at his peak just because of the five-category production. You know, maybe I'm assuming a little too much with the third-base job being his, just given that, you know, we haven't seen him against big league pitching, and he's more kind of a natural second baseman, but it does just kind of seem like they're going to let him kind of run with that job. So that's kind of what pushed him ahead of Mayo for me.
Yeah, I think if he has, you know, a decent spring, yeah, if he struggles, you know, probably don't see him right away, but I think if he performs adequately in spring, I think that probably is his job. But yeah, Shaw, I mean, he's one of those, you know, guys that doesn't really stand out in any one area. Obviously, you know, not huge power, huge speed, but just does everything well across the board. And like you said, yeah, that 20-20, maybe he gets up in the, you know, low to mid-20s power speed at peak with a, you know, solid average and good OBP as well. I think that's what you're looking at here. And not one that really, there's no like red flags in the profile, not one area that he's going to, you know, not provide an impact in. You know, solid approach, it's pretty solid across the board. And, you know, I mentioned from May 10th on, after a slow start last year, Shaw slashed 306, 384, 525 in 94 games with 18 home runs and 24 steals and a walk rate just over 10%. So definitely finished the season strong, and hopefully he carries that over into 2025. And I think at peak, let's say he stays at third base long term, which I think he probably does, I think you see him maybe not be like a elite tier one guy, you know, put him up there with like the Joe Rams of the world, but maybe he's probably like a tier two guy, you know, top 5 to 7 at this position or something like that. I think that's the upside long term for Matt Shaw. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just such a high floor to hit. You guys have a lot of confidence in him. I think the Cubs have shown confidence in Shaw as well, which I think in turn gives us confidence that he's going to play. And, you know, we've seen the inconsistencies with prospects coming up, but I feel like Shaw just given his high floor, I'm pretty confident. I mean, the hit tool's good. Like, you're talking above average contact skills overall in the zone. He chases slightly below average rate or better than average rate, so he's going to get on base. The exit velocities are really good, too. I mean, he's not like a going to be a 30 home run bat, but, you know, he put up a 105-90 if he put up good launch angles, and that creates barrels, and that's what Shaw did last year. He ran really solid barrel rate, and so that leads to home runs. He's got some speed. I think the floor is just very high, and that's why I'm fairly confident in Shaw, especially out of the gate. And, you know, there may be some struggles initially, but I think that he's one of those types that's going to figure out. And if he breaks camp with the team, yeah, I think that he's going to put up a really good season and certainly a viable option for you in 2025 if you're looking that route.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of breaking camp with the team, this next guy, Kobe Mayo, probably will not. Though, you know, we always could see an injury happen, you know, between now and opening day, obviously. But assuming nobody gets hurt, looking like Baltimore will go with Jordan Westberg at the hot corner and give another shot to Jackson Holliday, which they absolutely should. So it kind of leaves Kobe Mayo without a spot to open the season. You know, he can play a little bit of first base as well, but they still got Ryan Mountcastle there. You know, Ryan O'Hearn DHing. So really no open spot for Kobe Mayo to start the season. So how do you see this playing out, James? I know it's kind of hard to predict, but, you know, obviously last year we saw other guys struggle to get into this lineup. You know, Jackson Holliday, Mayo as well, struggled into the lineup despite dominating in AAA. Do you see him having a role with this Baltimore team at some point in 2025?
I think he probably will. I don't know when he will have a role, and I don't know for how long he will have a role, just because of the crowded depth chart that you alluded to. And, you know, he's even got guys he's competing with for playing time that are also going to, you know, probably open the year back at AAA. So, I just think it's tough to just look at Kobe Mayo for 2025 and feel confident in what you're getting. Like, I don't think you can build a roster and say, well, I think I'm getting 18 homers from Kobe Mayo, because you can't really bank on that. But, you know, he's a really good hitting prospect. And if it was just a little easier for him to break through on this roster, I would be trying to buy him wherever possible. But I just think the Orioles are going to, like, they can afford to be patient. I'm sure they would love to trade Ryan Mountcastle and get 100 cents on the dollar back in a trade, but they aren't getting that, and they're not getting that for Ryan O'Hearn. And so they're just going to carry those guys as the market dictates, and they're going to play in front of a guy like Kobe Mayo, but injuries will happen. He's incredibly talented. I think, you know, last year is going to be kind of humbling for him. I expect him to have a monster year at AAA, so there will be calls for Kobe Mayo to get the call at some point in like May or June, and it's just a question of whether there's playing time available for him. But I do expect him to have a much better year in 2025 when he does get those opportunities against big league pitching.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the small sample size, you know, in the major leagues, which was only 46 plate appearances, kind of soured some people, oddly enough. I mean, it's only 46 plate appearances. Shouldn't really be changing your opinion on a top or any real young player, really, especially a top prospect like Kobe Mayo, that quickly. I mean, yeah, he went, you know, 4-for-41 with 22 strikeouts. Yeah, it was terrible. But, you know, Jackson Holliday's first go around was terrible. Wyatt Langford took a lot of time to kind of settle in, though he wasn't that bad right out of the gate. But Mayo also hit 25 home runs and 26 doubles in just 93 games. Down in the minor leagues, you know, 89 of which were at AAA Norfolk. So, yeah, definitely still think, you know, he could turn into one of the best power hitting, you know, really at this position or really overall in the game, like 35 homer power, especially if they're moving those left field fences back in a little bit. That'll definitely help. But, you know, Mayo, definitely, I'm still as high on him now as I was, you know, 12 months ago. I don't put any stock whatsoever in that, you know, little debut of his in the major leagues. So just don't know when he's going to break in. Kierstad's still trying to get in, too. So I just wonder if they maybe look to maybe include Mayo in a trade for pitching. I don't know. Kind of hard to say. But, yeah, I'm with you, James. It's kind of hard to predict what we're going to get from Mayo this year. But I'm still very high on him long-term, obviously, as it sounds like you are as well. Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, crazy enough, like, that's been one of the bigger questions I've gotten. What happened to Kobe Mayo last year? I mean, like, he played highly inconsistently in the majors, and he was thrown into a fire of a playoff run where there was a lot of pressure, and he just didn't get consistent looks. I mean, he was pinch hitting half the games that he got plate appearances. He wasn't starting regularly, so, yeah, I think it's hard to just get in the groove. I mean, what Mayo did last year in AAA, how he's improved his contact skills year over year, that stands out. And I still think that there could be a Austin Riley-type hitter in this profile. Yep. I mean, he doesn't chase. He's going to get on base. The exit velocities are incredibly high. He gets the ball at ideal launch angles. He just checks a lot of boxes for me. It's going to be a slow burn just because it's Baltimore. I mean, shoot, maybe he is traded. That would be fun if he was traded to San Diego for Cease. I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting to see how that would work, but I think that would be a fun fit, and maybe that's not even realistic. Maybe they want to hold on to Mayo, and that probably is the case. I have a hard time believing they would just want to trade him, just given what he's shown them, and he's just not going to find the playing time this year. For 2025, I don't know if I want anything to do with him, honestly, just given that I don't think he's going to play enough. Like, I was looking at his projections, like how many plate appearances he's projected for. Steamer gave him 97, and Fangraph's depth charts gave him 105. And, yeah, I mean, that's – as things stand, like, that's not all that crazy just because there's no spot for him. So that could change tomorrow. I mean,
right.
That could happen with a trade. But as things stand, it's just hard to fit Mayo into this picture long term. I mean, the bat's still really, really good, so I'm very excited about him long-term and haven't changed my expectations a bit.
Yeah, I was going to put the over-under at, like, 200, so I thought that might have even been a little low, but just so hard to predict with him. And really all these young Baltimore hitters, though, if Holiday gets off to another really slow start, obviously Westbrook can slide back over to the Keystone, opening up third base for Mayo. So there is a path. Let's just see. Obviously, Holiday gets a – he'll probably get at least a good chance to open the year, given his – top prospect status as well. Let's go a little bit further down our rankings here to Cam Collier of the Cincinnati Reds. In 119 games last year in high A, slash 248, 355, 443, 20 home runs, stole two bags, 21 doubles as well. He's a guy that has, kind of been settling into that upper 240s range. OBP right around 350 for the last 2 years. 2023 was spent entirely at low A Daytona in the Florida State League, but hit for a lot more power in 2024. James, what are your thoughts on Cam Collier? Is he a guy you'd be looking to target right now in Dynasty Leagues?
Absolutely. I think he's a great target. I know we're doing third base. He might end up at first base. I loved what I saw from Cam Collier as the season went on last year. He had a OBP over 400, hit 265 with a strikeout rate under 24% over his last 65 games, and he was 19 years old. So just to be getting to as much game power as he is at this age, at high A, and to have that type of plate skill base, it's just really exciting because he might just be scratching the surface, but even if he's not, even if this is kind of him coming into his own, he's got pole-to-pole power, cozy park, could have some years where he's eligible at first base and third base, which would be nice. I love it. I love what I see, and I kind of found myself comparing him more to first base prospects than third base prospects. But like, if you compare a Cam Collier to even guys like Xavier Isaac or kind of just those post Bryce Eldridge level first base prospects, I think he fits right in with those guys. He's younger. He hasn't shown as much swing and miss issues. There's just a ton of power potential. So I'm all in on Cam Collier this offseason.
Yeah, I think that was the question, too. I mean, I think there was a pretty split camp on Collier after he was drafted on how much power would he hit for as a corner infielder. And what do you have in 2023? Yeah, 6 home runs in 2023. Didn't really, get rid of all of his naysayers that were saying that he didn't have a lot of power, but he definitely started showing more of that this year. So it was really nice to see. Chris, what are your thoughts on Collier right now?
Yeah, I feel like he's just somehow become a post-hype already at such a young age. It is.
Yeah, he just turned 20.
Yeah. I mean, it's
last month.
Yeah, it sounds stupid to say, but people are like already kind of taken steps back on him, and I think he's actually taking steps forward. And, yeah, I think that's – James mentioned him with the first base guys. He makes better contact than all those guys. So, you know, it's an interesting profile. Wherever he winds up, whether it be first, third – like, I think the bat's going to play. I'm not worried about that at all because his progress has been really good. And considering he spent the entire season as a 19-year-old in high A in a league that's not all that hitter-friendly, I thought he showed some really good things. And – the progression. I think that you just kind of look at his career arc, like the progression that we've seen is really encouraging. I think after 2023, there were the questions, could he lift the ball enough? And he certainly answered that in 2024. He lifted the ball at good rates. He pulled the ball at higher rates. He got to the pull side in the air more often. And I think the exit velocity is obviously really good. The power is definitely there. And the hit tool. I think the hit tool showed to at least be average for his age and level. So, you know, those things were encouraging to me. So definitely in on Cam Collier and think that he's probably a pretty good buy right now, just given, like, you know, if I want to compare him to those first base guys, like Xavier Isaac, his hit tool looks like a 30 grade right now, just given the contact rates he put up. And, like, Cam Collier looking a little better. Obviously, Isaac has more juice, but, you know, it is interesting buy, I think, and the perceived value is probably not where it actually is. So, yeah, I'm in on Collier.
Yeah, I am as well, and I feel like I'm probably a little too low with my ranking on him. I got to reevaluate that after we're done with this podcast. But yeah, the fact that he did come into his own with the game power this year, solid contact skills, not a standout there, but decent enough. You know, obviously, he won't provide you any speed. Like, you know, Isaac probably give you a bit more in the stolen base department. But if he can just settle in as a guy that hits, you know, 260, 265, 270, somewhere in that range, which, given where his future home ballpark is definitely possible. And even just like low 20s home runs. I don't think he's going to be like a 30-plus homer guy, but even if he can hit like 270 with 20 home runs, maybe get him in that Alec Bohm kind of range with overall value, like a good corner infielder type for your fantasy team. So, yeah, I like Collier a decent bit as well. And, again, I think I'm going to need to move him up my rankings a little bit here. But next one here, we'll go from one Cam to another Cam with Cam Smith. Drafted by the Cubs, now with the Houston Astros, went down in that Kyle Tucker deal about, 3 weeks ago or so, was the 14th overall pick in the 2024 draft out of Florida State University, and had a really good debut in 32 games. You know, he's played a little bit at low A, high A, and double A, had 16 extra base hits in those 32 games with 7 home runs, 15 walks to 24 strikeouts, with a 313, 396, 609 slash line. I mean, I think there's a decent amount of hype right now around Cam Smith, given, you know, the big year he had at Florida State before the draft, and then him carrying that over, having a really good debut in the minor leagues, now into a really park that seems to fit his profile really well. But at the same time, you know, they also got Isak Paredes there in Houston in that deal. He is with under team control through 2027. Also signed Christian Walker at first base and through 2027 as well. So kind of a question mark of where does Cam Smith fit into the long-term picture and what does his ETA look like? James, what are your thoughts on Smith and when we might see him in Houston?
Yeah, I love pretty much everything about Smith, and I love his trajectory that he's on. He was one of the top gainers in the country his draft-eligible sophomore year with contact rate, 8th percentile, exit velocity, etc. He hit really well on the Cape Cod League as well. Dominated against single-A pitching. I think it's worth noting that, like, the one knock, even going back to college, was just, you know, getting the ball in the air regularly to get to the power potential that he has, because he is a really big kid. Like, he looks like he should be able to get to 30 homer power, but he has struggled to get the ball in the air consistently. He did not struggle with that in 15 games at single A, but he kind of did again at high A, a little bit at double A. So I'm not confident on where the power ends up with Cam Smith, but I am confident that he'll hit enough to play every day. I like the move to Houston. Obviously, it's park that's friendly to righty hitters, but also it's just a depth chart that's more accessible to Cam Smith than the one in Chicago. So I'm a huge fan. I think he's in that top tier of prospects from the draft. He's not in the Sasaki tier, but I think he's a great first round pick in first year player draft.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all have him in our top four at this position. James and I both have him fourth, and Chris has him third. So we all think very highly of Cam Smith here. But Chris, what are your thoughts on Smith long term when we see him in Houston?
Yeah, so obviously the question being, like, we know that Christian Walker's going to be there for 3 years. They've got Isak Paredes around for 3 more years. So, you know, how does he fit in the puzzle? And, you know, I think the Smith is pretty advanced, so it's, you know, he could be on the fast track. He'll turn 22 in February, like James mentioned. He was a draft-eligible sophomore. He was a little bit older. Just that's why he was eligible. But, you know, the gains, I think, were notable. The only question, like James mentioned, was the ground balls. He had a 50% ground ball rate in college this year, despite putting up the numbers that he did. And I think that held him back. I mean, when you hit the ball as hard as he did, it's, you know, you're going to get to more home runs eventually with loft. And I think we did see some of that in single A, but just kind of a matter of time, I think. You know, I trust that Houston can optimize his swing to get to where he needs to be. I mean, they do a good job developing guys. I know people may roll their eyes because they haven't had any draft picks. Like, you look, go back to the scandal, they just haven't had high draft picks. They do a good job of development in that organization. So, you know, I think that Houston will be a great fit for Smith here. They don't have to fast track him, which is good. And, yeah, he was pushed aggressively in with the Cubs, making it double A out of the gate. So, yeah, maybe he starts there. I wouldn't be shocked if he started in high A either. So, you know, if they start him in Asheville, that would be incredible. He would.
You'd love that.
Yeah, he would hit.
The ground balls wouldn't be an issue in Asheville.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be curious. I'll be curious to see, like, that'll kind of be telling, like, if where they send him to start. And that may tell us kind of how they value his trajectory, but they don't have to rush him, which is good.
Yeah. I like Cam Smith in general. I think he's, you know, a guy that's got hit for both average and power, and love the fit with Houston, love the ballpark. I just don't know, you know, where he fits in this long-term plan, because every spot where he could possibly go to, like, unless he wants to try to learn outfield, which I don't know if that's even, you know, even a possibility, because the outfield with Houston is, it's weird how good the infield is and how bad the outfield is potentially. Like, they're going to roll Chaz McCormick, Jake Myers, and, like, Taylor Trammell or something like that in the outfield to start the year. Obviously, third base, we mentioned they have Paredes under team control for 3 more years. First base, same thing with Walker. Altuve's, I think, through 2029. Second base, I saw they can move, like, Paredes to second, at least not for the next few years. Yordan Alvarez, I think, is through also 2029 or something like that. So, yeah, I'm not sure where he fits in long term. You know, maybe there's another deal at some point, but it's kind of, I'm not going to let that sway my, you know, thought process too much. It's kind of hard to, like, he's not, like, on the cusp of debuting, so it's not, like, a problem yet. And these things usually have a way of working themselves out one way or another. But, yeah, I definitely like Smith, the hitter. I like the fit with the team, with the ballpark. So I think he's a really good dynasty target right now. All right, before we move on to our 11 through 25, to recap the top 10, James had Matt Shaw, Kobe Mayo, Cam Collier, Cam Smith, Brady House, Eric Patonti, Brock Wilkin, Braden Taylor, Gino Groover, and Mike Bovey. Chris had Mayo, Shaw, Smith, Collier, Luke Adams, Sal Stewart, Patonti, Braden Taylor, Juan Brito, and Davison de los Santos. I had Mayo, Shaw, Taylor, Smith, Jace Young, Brady House, de los Santos, Shea Whitcomb, Cam Collier, and Zach DeCenzo. From my 11 through 25, I have Bryce Matthews, Thomas Sajazy, Brock Wilkins, Sal Stewart, Eric Patonti at 15. 16 through 20, Luke Adams, Kyle Karros, Caleb Durbin, Gino Groover, and Andre Chaparro. And 21 through 25, Mac Horvath, Juan Brito, Mike Bovey, Will Wagner, and Charles McAdoo. James, who do you got 11 through 25?
Well, I've got an even uglier list of prospects because I didn't include the guys who had played 20-plus games there, but it wasn't their primary position. So My 11 through 25 is Brian Ramos, Jace Young, Charles McAdoo, Luke Adams, Cale Fountain, Austin Charles, Cole Mathis, Chase Harlan, Johnny Severino, Shea Whitcomb, Tommy White, Kyle Karros, Graham Pauly, Billy Amick, Carson DeMartini.
All right, Chris, who do you got?
All righty, I've got Brady House, Bryce Matthews, Johnny Severino, Jace Young, Gino Groover, 16 through 20, Matt Horvath, I feel too high right now reading that, Shea Whitcomb, Mike Bovee, Tommy White, Charles McAdoo, and then 21 through 25, Brian Ramos, Brock Wilkin, Carson DeMartini, Billy Amick, and Cale Fountain.
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw you had Horvath higher, because I'm supposed to be the high guy on these North Carolina guys, you know, Horvath, Honeycutt, all them. So
I finally came up with a comp for – I don't do comps, but I came up with a comp for Matt Horvath. He's literally Dylan – he's Dylan Moore. Like, that's who he is. He's not going to be flashy. He's not going to play all the time, but he's going to play a lot of positions, give you some speed and a little bit of power, so –
I can see that. I like that. I mean, again, anyone out there that's a Matt Horvath supporter probably does not like a Dylan Moore comp. But, hey, Dylan Moore's a major leaguer. Dylan Moore had, what, 400 and some odd plate appearances last year? Dylan Moore plays. Maybe they can Matt can fill that same type of role down there in Tampa Bay long term. And speaking of Tampa Bay, we'll start with a Tampa Bay guy with Braden Taylor, who I think is becoming one of the more decisive guys at this position. I know he's played a little bit of shortstop as well, a little bit of second base too, but you see a pretty wide range of rankings here. I think I'm the highest one here on him. Yeah, I have him 3, and then both James and Chris have him 8. But you know, obviously the big reason why is the contact skills, which were okay in high A. It was about 72% in high A, but plummeted down to about 64.5%. in double A, so that is a concern without question. But you know, Taylor has been a guy that's shown a pretty solid blend of power and speed. Had 20 home runs, 29 steals last year. Also walked at a high clip as well, which is something he did in college. High walk rates in college, and had 76 walks in 508 plate appearances between high A and double A last year. So definitely has some good things in the profile, but also that concerning. The contact rate and K rates are not terrible. It was about 27.5%, but a little bit on the higher end as well. James, you know, where are you at on Braden Taylor? You know, how concerned are you with those lower contact rates we saw from him at Double A?
I wouldn't say I'm concerned. I think he's better than his strikeout rate at Double A indicates. I'm just not that impressed overall with, like, I think he's a good prospect. He's probably gonna have a nice run as at least a strong side platoon guy, but I just don't see like a carrying, like, what's he doing that's getting you excited, you know? Like, maybe he hits 20 homers some years, sometimes it's maybe 18 homers, probably double digit steals over a full season, but probably not 15 to 20 steals, probably more like 12 steals. And then I don't think he's hitting for a super high average. Fine OBP, but it's just like after we get past the Cams, after we get past Batanti, it's just tough to like come up with a lot of positive stuff to say about these guys.
Yeah, it's either like they have one carrying tool and the rest are questionable, or they're just kind of, you know, have no carrying tools. Like, yeah, but Brent Taylor, nothing stands out about him, and he'll need to hit for at least a solid average here. But yeah, it's not like he's going to be like a 25-25 guy or anything like that, but if he can get to like that 20 and 12 to 15 range, hit 250, that's still pretty solid. But yeah, definitely, like I said, after the, like, there's really only two elite guys at this position. You know, obviously, maybe Lawler moves over there. Maybe we get, you know, Jesus Mate, you know, something like that. But you know, Shaw, Mayo in some order, and then pretty good drop off for me. And you know, you get the Cams in there too. But Chris, what are your thoughts on Braden Taylor?
Yeah, I've set on him a lot between Charleston and then Bowling Green, so single and high A, and just never been impressed. He just does. He just kind of plays ball and it's fine. He has no carrying tool. I think the hit tool's below average and probably projects to be below average. There's the exit velocities are below average. His speed, like, I've got clock times on him that are just 50 grade. So I really don't expect him to run. I mean, it's easy to, honestly, a lot of guys can steal bases in high A, so I think he's just kind of a boring profile that gets on base at a decent clip and doesn't give you much else. So I'm just not that excited about the profile either. And I don't know. I just have concerns with the hit tool where just their struggles against breaking balls, and that was really exposed as he moved up to double A. So I'm just not very high on Taylor. The race system's so deep at this point. And we know they platoon guys. I think I had them ninth when I wrote up the Rays. So they're just so deep, and they've got so many guys at the big league level. They got so many guys in the minors. Like, his versatility helps, but at the same time, like, he's not really a standout in the field. He's fine in multiple spots. So, you know, that'll be interesting to see kind of how that shakes out for him, just because it's going to be hard to find playing time. And, you know, maybe a platoon is kind of where he fits in, and we know the Rays like to do that. So I'm just not excited. There's nothing in the profile that gets me excited either.
Yeah, I feel like you can just like copy and paste a lot of what we're saying about each of these guys. Like, especially that last sentence, like, nothing, not a lot in the profile that excites you. You can say that about a lot of these guys at this position. Yeah, that's for sure. That's kind of how I feel about this next guy. We go from a Braden to a Brady with Brady House of the Washington Nationals. Still only 21 years old. Feels like he's been around forever. But still only 21 years old. Nearly split his time last year between AA Harrisburg and AAA Rochester. 129 games overall. 241, 297, 402 slash line. 21 doubles, 19 home runs, 6 steals as well in 542 play appearances. House has been a guy that, well, I think he's fine. I just, it kind of fits with the mold of this episode. Nothing really stands out with Brady House to me. Contact skills are in the low 70% range, which is fine. That doesn't stand out there. I mean, I don't think he's got impactful power. Not a guy that's going to provide really any impact or more than, you know, a few steals here and there. I don't think he's going to be a guy that gives you even 10-plus steals. You know, walk rate's never been high either, so a little bit more on the aggressive side. Though the K rate's not terrible. It's like he's going to post like a 30-plus percent K rate, but maybe he's, you know, 250, 255, something like that, 260 maybe with 15 to 18 home runs. Maybe he gets up to low 20s, but I don't know. It's fine, but I'm just not overly high on House. Nothing really stands out there, and it doesn't provide much speed either. So not super high on House personally, but James, what do you think on House here?
Yeah, I was too high on House a year ago. I think I'm still higher on him than you guys, at least in this third base rankings. But it's more just kind of, he's young. I love the bat speed. And, you know, maybe he just kind of rebounds from a really disappointing season. That's at least some upside that I think is tangible. I think he actually does have more of a power ceiling than you were alluding to, Eric. But he'll either get to like 25 to 30 homer power, or he just won't be playing. He's either going to be like a 25, 30 homer bat, or he's just not going to be a regular. And I think he's young enough. I think the physical tools with the bat speed, 6'4", there's something there with the power. But he was just a complete mess with the hit tool last year, and I didn't see it going that bad. He wasn't walking much in 2023, but I thought he was just kind of, everything was coming so easy to him that, you know, he was swinging a lot of pitches because he was doing a lot of damage, but really just fell apart as a hitter, especially at AAA. So there's a really low floor here, but I do still see a decently high, like 3.5 category ceiling. But, you know, agree that he's not really a threat on the bases.
Chris, what about you?
Yeah. He's just been popular for so long. Like, House became popular when he was like 14 or 15 on the prep circuit. Just was a guy that everybody read versus somebody I saw in high school. And, you know, I still think there's potential there, as James alluded to. And it is interesting. Like, I look at the, you know, numbers, and obviously he struck out too much, but the contact rates have been pretty steady his entire career. They're average for his age and league standards. So one of the biggest problems with House is just his launch angles being inconsistent. When he does get the ball in the air, he hits it pretty hard. His average EV on fly balls last year was 96 miles an hour. So that'll obviously play. Average EV on line drives, 93. So those are good marks. He made respectable in zone contact at, you know, 82%. So you like to see that. But it's just the inconsistencies that we saw from plate appearance to plate appearance, basically. Hard hit rate above 40%. That's obviously notable, but he's hyper-aggressive, chased at a high clip, you know, upper 30s% chase rate. And it's just, you have to find more consistent. I think House could put it all together, and I think 2025 is going to be a big show-me year for him. Just given, one, I mean, he's been fast-tracked. I mean, they've pushed him aggressively. He's had a lot of injuries throughout his career, but I do think there's still certainly reasons that he could bounce back and jump these rankings for sure. I just think that he needs to show more consistency. That'll be the biggest thing for Brady House.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's one where we could probably see him at some point this year. I mean, obviously he played a good chunk at AAA last year, so maybe we see him this summer. But yeah, kind of wondering where that power does wind up. Obviously, I'm a little bit lower on it than James is, but like I said, I still think he's a fine hitter. I don't think he's bad by any measure, but it's another one that just doesn't really stand out to me. But again, we've said that about several guys at this position, but this next guy, you know, could potentially be one of those standout names at this position in the coming years, and someone that I'm definitely too low on, even though I do have him, this Eric Bitonti I'm talking about here, I do have him push a top 100 overall, but I think I have him a bit low at this position, though that is a pretty massive tier where he is for me, but probably gonna move him up. There's definitely a lot of excitement here, a lot of projection with a guy like Eric Bitonti, who just turned 19 back a little over a month ago. It was mid-November, he turned 19. So played at the age of 18 all of the season between the complex level and low A. He's already 6'4 and about 220 is his list weight. He's already a very large, strong individual. See if he, you know, continues to grow a little bit, but even if not, already pretty big now. And had a pretty good year. 79 games, 358 plate appearances, .282, .402, .544, 23 doubles, 16 home runs, also stole 12 bags as well, 59 walks to 100 strikeouts in those 79 games. So James, you know, probably one of the more exciting young players at this position, or maybe one of the more exciting prospects overall at this position, with maybe some of the highest upside of anybody we rank here or talk about in this episode. So what are your thoughts on Eric Bitonti moving forward?
Yeah, I think he's probably got the highest ceiling of the guys outside of my top four. After Shaw, Mayo, and the two Cams, I think Bitonti's probably got the highest ceiling at the position. But I still think he could bust. You know, he's a long ways away. There's still, you know, questions with the strikeouts, how big he is. But I could see him going down like kind of a Kobe Mayo prospect path where he becomes a top 10 prospect just on the basis of the four category potential, just the monster power ceiling. I don't know whether he's a sell high this offseason or whether to hold him a bit longer and then maybe explore selling high on him, but I think he's kind of one of those guys where it's, you know, it's borderline top 100 prospect if you're risk averse. If all you care about is upside, maybe he's a borderline top 50 prospect. But unlike a lot of these guys, he at least has stuff that's exciting going on, and you could see him shooting up rankings this year.
Chris, what are your thoughts on Bitonti?
I think he's a complete boomer bust type prospect, and, you know, it's fun to dream on the upside because Bitonti hits the ball as hard as anybody his age, and the exit velocities were incredibly high. I think he had a max of 112, if I'm not mistaken, and a 90th of north of 105. So, you know, really good pop for somebody that was 18. The contact skills are hit or miss. They're questionable. There's struggles with breaking balls. And, you know, I think those are things to be aware of because, you know, you can get away at somebody like Bitonti with that kind of power. He can get away with it at the lower levels of the complex and single A because he's going to feast on bad fastballs and hanging breakers. So, you know, I'll be curious to see as they push him how he fares against better breaking balls. But he is fairly good eye at the plate, low chase rate, and it's just making more contact on those breaking balls. His launch angles are elite, the barrel rate extremely high. Like I said, I think that that's the kind of profile to dream on, but there is the risky aspect as well where it could go south really quick. But I think the cost is still low enough where you can not spend too much and get him in a dynasty and potentially, hopefully, ride him up the rankings just and see where it goes. But no, it could go south pretty quick as well with this kind of profile.
Yeah, he's a prospect that I feel like he could be like top 25 overall at some point next year, or he could be a guy that's like not even in our top 250. And I think the pretty wide range of potential outcomes here with a guy like Batanti. But yeah, it's hard not to be excited about a guy that's already shown, you know, good eye at the plate with big power, and you know, just his size at his age is definitely really exciting and one of those prospects you can dream on, which you can't really say about a lot of the guys at this position currently. But we will close out the show with our breakout picks. James, who was your breakout pick for third base?
Well, in shallower leagues, it'd be Cam Collier, but I'll go with Cale Fountain, who was a prep pick by the Padres, got, I think, $1.7 million. Just, you know, he's one of those types that we could be talking about, like an Eric Batanti a year from now. Just, you know, huge prep third baseman, big-time bat speed, big-time power. I like the Padres under A.J. Preller have a pretty good track record on the prep position player front, especially when they shell out big money. So, I'm interested to see where it goes. I mean, he might just not hit. Definitely possible. But there's at least upside here. And I think the fact that he hasn't played yet, the fact that he was sort of not a crazy, highly touted guy before the draft, I think it makes for a nice first-year player draft investment. And there's that upside in the power department that I mentioned. You know, in shallower leagues, Cam Collier, I think, is a great buy right now. I'm probably going to rank him inside my top 30 on the next update. But Cale Fountain would be a normal Dynasty League breakup pick.
And the Padres had a pretty good draft in terms of just names, like Cash Mayfield, Cash with a K, Cale Fountain, pretty solid names there by the Padres. But
Boston Bateman.
Yeah, Boston Bateman, too. Yeah, they had a good name draft, for sure. But yeah, Cale Fountain, big guy. So one of those, like, you know, low risk, because it's, you know, cheap price tag, but high upside if he hits, for sure. Chris, who's your breakout pick?
Yeah, kind of went a little deeper as well, just given names and how they work out. And another draftee, Carson DeMartini with the Phillies out of Virginia Tech. I mean, he had a down 2024 year, and that kind of hurt his stock. Like, he was talked about as a first-round guy coming into the draft, and then he struck out in 20% of plate appearances at VT, and that's pretty bad. He had 21 homers, so that was encouraging. The underlying power metrics for DeMartini were really good. Had 91 mile an hour average exit velocity, 106 90th, good launch angles, high pull rates on line drives and fly balls. Like, you love to see that. But he did show major contact concerns in college. 72% end zone and 64% overall. Those are terrible. But he made a swing change. The Phillies made a little approach and swing change when he got drafted. He dropped his hands. He's more square in the box, much cleaner, quieter load, and the contact rates jumped. Now, it was a small sample we're talking. He only had 104 plate appearances in single A, and this is a college bat, but I think that's notable because the overall contact rate was 80% in pro ball and 85% end zone, and had a 20% chase rate to go with it. So combining the improved contact skills backed by a swing and approach change with the power, I think DeMartini's kind of sneaky here. I think he's not someone that people are going to look to draft in FYPDs, and I have him just outside of my top 30 for FYPDs because I do think that those tangible changes can stick. Then we're potentially looking at a pretty solid player that has good pop and, you know, much more respectable contact skills now. So I'm banking on those skills sticking because I think that the stock could really soar if so.
All right, and my breakout pick is Gino Gruber. Saw him out in Arizona, and he was just hitting everything, not for any type of extra base hits or anything like that. A lot of singles out of him in Arizona. In fact, 21 of his 22 hits were singles, but was just putting a lot of good swings, a lot of good at-bats together. Only struck out 13 times in 75 plate appearances. And this is after a pretty good season with him. Only played in 61 games, most of which were at High A Hillsboro. / 281, 367, 474 overall, with 10 home runs, 12 doubles, 30 walks, 36 strikeouts. I mean, with him, he's another one. It's not really a sexy profile here, but really good contact skills. He was above 80% both in High A and Double A. And I think there's more power than he's shown. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a masher by any means, but could he be, you know, close to like a 20 home run guy? Yeah, I think he could. I think he's, you know, upper teens, maybe, you know, a few years at peak when he's low 20s, something like that. But again, really good contact skills, really good approach. As I mentioned, Ole Miss as many walks as strikeouts. I think he's going to be a guy that gives you a good average, good OBP, you know, some pop, and maybe, you know, four or five steals. I mean, he's probably a below average runner, but really good bat, kind of a high floor, and someone that I just don't see get ranked too highly, you know, in many places. So not the sexiest breakout pick, but I like Gino Groover here to rise up rankings in 2025. That is going to wrap us up. James, as always, it's a pleasure talking ball with you, talking prospects with you. I want you to let the good people know where, obviously, where you can be found and what you got going on over at RotoWire.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on. This was a lot of fun. You can follow me on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. You can sign up now for RotoWire for the baseball season. I would really appreciate that if you did. And if you like listening to Chris and Eric, I'll be having them on my podcast in a couple weeks to do a rare podcast feature, the FYPD mock. So keep a lookout for that.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Absolutely. Go check out all the great things James got going on and all the great stuff over at RotoWire. What a great tools that I use all the time. But that's going to wrap us up. We'll be back again later this week with our third base dynasty episode. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.